CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I have Matt Moore on the telephone via Skype line. Actually, it's just a Skype line. You're not on the phone. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm okay. You know what? I don't like your tone, so I would like you to meet me by the bus.
I'll beat your...
We had a little fight, a little skirmish. That was fun. I was at the Timberwolves game. I had no idea this was going on. And then I see the tweet from Darnell Mayberry, and then I see the video on CBS Sports, and it's fun every time someone has a Chris Mills moment.
For those that don't know what happened, there was a couple of elbows thrown between Kendrick Perkins and Zach Randolph, because that's what happens between the two of them. Russell Westbrook is shooting a free throw, and they're talking as it starts to line up. He shoots the first free throw. Perkins says, "I will meet you at the bus." And Zach Randolph says, "I will beat your," insert word for backside, on national television. We've got the video up. It's amazing. They got into it. After the game, there weren't any punches thrown. There was no physical altercation, but a lot of talking apparently outside the bus. And Zebo with the famous quote, "There's a lot of bluffing going on. I don't bluff."
I mean, I think that, you know, allegedly there wasn't anything that came of it, I don't believe, at least not on Zebo's end. But there was a drug dealer that got beaten half to death at his house once, right?
Yeah, there was a little bit of a problem, although he wasn't...
He allegedly wasn't involved.
He was upstairs. I mean, it happens to me all the time.
Oh, no, if I had a dollar for every time. Zebo doesn't seem like the guy. Like, I think he's from Flint, Michigan. That's just a pretty, it's not the best area. I think one could classify that. I don't know that I would mess with Zebo. Even with someone like Perkins, you know, there's some people that think he's maybe one of the fake tough guys in the league. Some people think he is really tough. Even then, like, there's a line. Like, so, you know, fake tough guys didn't go after Charles Oakley for a reason. I'm not saying Zebo is Charles Oakley, but... He's pretty close, at least relatively to today's league.
Yeah, it's somebody said on the ESPN broadcast, they're like, there's a number of guys in this league you don't mess with, and Kendrick Perkins is one of them. But another one of them is Zach Randolph. You said last night you paid $500.
Oh, easy.
For them to do a fight.
Easy.
I would pay $750 if they did a Q&A before and afterwards.
Oh God, yeah. Oh, if we and people started asking me, like, you know, cage match or ring, and my answer to every either or question was yes. I just want to see these two fight.
It was really amazing. It was a great game too.
Yeah, great game. Grizzlies pulled it out, and Zebo and Perkins have history, don't they? Didn't last year or last time they played in the playoffs? I think Zebo. Was talking trash about how Perkins can only foul him, he can't guard him.
Well, I think that they have, like, I think both those guys independently have problems with everyone. So you have guys that have problems with everyone playing each other.
What did you think of the Grizzlies' effort? Obviously, they get a big win on the road. And just a very impressive, they hold the Thunder to under 100 points. Rudy Gay went off. He had, what, 28, 30 points. What did you take away from the game?
The Grizzlies are very good. The Grizzlies are just are
breaking
right now,
news.
The team has so much confidence, and they're playing the style that they want. For years, this team's limitation has been if the starters weren't playing well, or when the starters had to go out, they were screwed. And the bench is playing so well.
Yeah.
Like Jared Bayless made this cross court pass last night off of the pick and roll, which is the kind of play that like coaches have been wanting him to make for years. And Lionel Hollins has gotten him to make that play. You know, when Rudy Gay's playing like that, they're very difficult to stop. He doesn't play like that often. Certainly not often enough. He's off to a tear this year. But, you know, 28 points on 21 shots, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 turnovers. You know, shot 57% from the field. I mean, that's the Rudy Gay game that you want. They get 28 from him, 20 from Randolph, 14 from Gasol. You know, Mike Conley had a quiet game, even though he had 7 assists. He had 8, 5, and 7. You know, and that you know they can win a lot with that kind of combo. And the amazing thing was Durant went off. I mean,
yeah, he
should have talked about that more yesterday. Was you know the Grizzlies' approach has been typically we're going to play him one on one, make him work for it. And then we're going to try and shut down everybody else.
Right.
Russell Westbrook, we thought he was kind of fixed, and not so much. Man.
He just cannot get a shot to fall right now.
6 of 19 last night.
Yeah.
Assists, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, he's been having good games for the most part. It's just he can't shoot. He cannot make a basket.
Which is funny because everyone said with Harden leaving that they needed playmaker.
Right.
Well, he's making plays, but he can't hit. But the offense isn't enough. But they need his offense.
Shooting 39% on the season.
Ugh. And he's one of those guys on the list we were talking about yesterday with more points than or more field goals than points.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the Grizzlies bench, and one thing I think is key is, yes, you need scoring from your bench, which is big. But when the scoring comes in the form of three-pointers from your bench, I think that's even bigger. Like Grizzlies had 31 points on 26 shots coming from their bench, which is not very efficient. However, they were 5 of 11 from 3 off the bench. Like, that's huge. You don't need huge scoring runs. You just need big baskets like that, and that's what the Grizzlies bench seems to give them right now.
And the Grizzlies were just more aggressive. They established themselves. They got guys in foul trouble, and that was really like the approach was. You know, they got Nick Collison in foul trouble. When that happens, you know, bad things start to occur.
Yeah, and you look conversely to the Thunder bench, 13 points on 13 shots. Only attempted 3 threes, made 1. I mean, just no punch off the bench at all.
Kevin Martin, only one of four. Like I'm not as shocked about the low points as I am about the fact he only shot 4 times. Like, they gotta get him the ball. They have to gear that offense. It's not gonna come as naturally as it did when Harden was there.
Yeah,
one thing I think is different is that it's not gonna come as naturally.
And if he's playing, I mean, he played 33 minutes, attempted 4 shots. He's one of those guys where, if he's not shooting a lot when he's out there, he really doesn't do anything for you. And you have, I mean, that's the key with him, which is fine. You know, there are specialists out there like that, but you have to get him the ball if he's going to be on the floor. Otherwise, there's literally no impact he makes.
Have you gotten a chance to watch Heat Clippers?
I did. That was fun. We should talk about, before we get into any of the fun stuff, Dwayne Wade looks so bad, and it's early, and he has a sore foot. I get that, and he re-aggravated it. That's a nice excuse for him making horrible decisions every time he has the ball. And I don't think he is, you know, oh, we need to start worrying about his decline. He had a bad game, but it looks so bad. That's the thing. It's not that he's not executing, and he's not performing. Like, he just looks so bad. Like, he is, I tweeted last night, who's going to tell Dwayne Wade, he's the old guy in the club right now. And then I got a lot of clever responses about Juwan Howard, which made me laugh. But it's awkward.
You know, the weird thing is there, I almost feel like the offense has evolved beyond him.
Oh, sure.
That's what I honestly feel like. I feel like even Bosch has grown into his role, and Wade, the offense has evolved, and it's Allen, and it's even Battier who hit some shots last night. And of course, it's LeBron, and Chalmers has taken on a bigger role, and they've got all these guys contributing. And where does Wade fit? Because if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, what's he doing?
Right.
Like, that's part of his. If Dwayne Wade doesn't have the ball in his hands, he's not a guy that plays off ball. He's not a perimeter shooter.
Right.
So if James is getting the ball every time down the floor as he needs to, and Chalmers is running the offense the rest of the time, you know, what's going to end up happening? And what ends up happening is Wade tries to go back to kind of what he was doing 3 years ago, which is primarily just isolation and trying to get guys and trying to slip by him and be faster than them, but he's not anymore. And so, you know, he's really going to have to find a way to adjust his game. Like, I'd like to see him work more in the post.
Yeah, and I felt like they went to him a little bit more in the post last night, or maybe it was just the parts I was really paying attention to him having the ball. It doesn't look like he has adjusted to whatever physical limitations he's going through right now. And that's, you know, common with injuries. If the foot really is that big of a problem where it's causing that, then, you know, that explains it. It's just tough. It'd be one thing to watch him do the things he's supposed to do and not make shots, but you're just watching him just really vomit on the court.
When they're making bad decisions, you know.
Yeah.
That team, for all its talent, doesn't have a whole lot of room for error because of how the offense is structured.
Yeah.
And that causes a lot of problems when he's off.
And it's not an issue really now. I think the defense is for the team defense. Well, he's not playing defense either, but the team defense is more of an issue now, and then you just want him to be right by the playoffs. You don't need him to really do a whole lot during the regular season because they are deeper now. But it just, you know, it's only a couple weeks in the season, but I just wonder, is he going to get to that point where he's consistently good enough in the playoffs? Or maybe LeBron's so good and Bosch is continuing to improve, even though he had a bad game last night, or at least bad game shooting the ball. You know, maybe it will be enough in the playoffs and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to see, because I think he'll probably have a stretch where he plays exceptionally well. I don't think, you know, I think that most of the veterans, like, it's rare to see guys just fall off a cliff, especially this young.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't see, everyone's really in a hurry to bury him, too.
Oh, yeah. Like, I made the joke last night, you know, can't wait for people to start saying the Heat need to amnesty him, and Tom Hammerstrow said, check my mentions right now.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, what they were tweeting him.
Yeah, like, everyone's really quick to bury him, and I'm just like, you know, you stick with a guy that you know you can trust. Like, don't get ahead of yourselves here. Let's give him some time.
Right.
Because Wade's a pretty smart player. I don't think that...
Which I think is why I'm so concerned about the decision-making, is because he is a smart player.
Yeah. I think the decision-making is probably injury. I've seen guys make bad, and you've seen this too, their decision-making suffers when they're being distracted by the fact that they're going ow, ow, sure, ow, ow. Like, it's distracting.
Sure.
So, you know, my big takeaway last night, honestly, was less about the Heat, but more about just the Clippers. Like,
oh yeah, they were phenomenal.
It's wave after wave with them.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the thing with them is, you know, you can survive Chris Paul. Like, I don't think Chris Paul's been stunningly good really at any point over the past two seasons. Like, there are stretches.
I disagree. I think he manages them so perfectly.
He manages them, but I'm saying, like, but it's that, not like with LeBron or with Kobe or with Durant, where he just, like, where the like, there's a stretch of, like, two quarters where it's just like, man, Chris Paul, and then, like, you look at the box score and you're like, holy crap, like, Chris Paul had this fantastic game. He hit the two big threes last night, but in general, I'm not like, holy wow. But then he just, like, he is doing his job. But even if he can survive that, it doesn't matter because they're killing you with Bledsoe and Crawford.
Yeah, you know, everyone keeps waiting for Crawford to fall off. I don't know that he will. I mean, it's something I've joked about, but he seriously hasn't worked on his shooting, you know, since he came into the league. And the fact that he did that and he's all of a sudden shooting so well to start the season, I really think that's a huge deal, and something that will probably carry over. I don't know that he's going to shoot. What's he shooting right now? He's shooting 51% on the season. That's probably not going to keep up. But if he splits that to his 40% career mark and he's around 45-46% with the amount he shoots, that's incredibly efficient and a ridiculous weapon to have at your disposal.
How about Bledsoe's block on Wade?
That was Justin Verrier on ESPN.com has a fantastic piece about the whole mini LeBron moniker for Eric Bledsoe that Jamal Crawford gave him, and LeBron even called him Baby LeBron after the game. And it's a great piece. And, you know, Bledsoe, he's a guy that the online basketball community just loves, and they want him to get more time, and he should be, you know, playing 35, 40, 48 minutes a game, you know, to really satisfy the online basketball community. And there are times where he is going to be blown way out of proportion and completely overvalued. That kid is fun to watch.
Yeah. My thing is, I want him to be playing 35 minutes for another team.
Right.
Because I just want to see what he's capable of. I'm not saying that he would, like, take them to being that's part of the thing. There's a gap between guys that are exceptional and are fun to watch and guys that are able to bring you wins.
Yeah.
And it's a subtle difference, and it's something that comes with time. I don't think there's any reason to believe that Bledsoe can't be that guy in 3 years.
Sure.
But he's still young.
What's funny is if you asked a lot of people right now if they'd rather have Brandon Jennings or Eric Bledsoe, they would take Eric Bledsoe. because there's a lot more unknown with him on what he can do with the team. Whereas Brandon Jennings is, I would say, definitely the better player right now, or the better point guard. But that might just be because we haven't seen Bledsoe be allowed to kind of have that free reign.
If Jennings keeps up his efficiency, I would agree with you. But Bledsoe in general tends to take smart shots and be pretty efficient versus Jennings, who, how can I put this, doesn't.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, Jennings knows how to manage a game a lot better. I think Jennings is a fantastic defender.
That's true. Defensively, I would agree with you. I think my big thing is, like
Eric Bledsoe
is about 10 times more likely to push the button on the heat check than Bledsoe is.
Oh, for sure.
And that's what gets him in trouble, is he starts, and then, he misses the heat check, and then he's like, well, hold on, let me see if I can restart the fire. It's like, no.
Right.
That's the point of the heat check.
I think my main thing is, and it's something I've felt about, let's say Andrew Bynum. I'm going to try to relate the two, is everyone compared Andrew Bynum to Dwight Howard last year, saying, look what Bynum does. He's putting up the same, same or better efficiency than Dwight Howard. And it's like, well, right, but Dwight Howard faces a double and triple team every night. Andrew Bynum is the third best player on his team. You know, Eric Bledsoe doesn't have the pressure of having to carry a team right now, so it's easier for him to be an impact in a secondary role. And I don't know that his impact can carry over when he eventually takes over a team. Doesn't mean he can't. I don't really buy that kind of thing until I see it. I'm a little overly cautious with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be interesting to see, but for the time being, he's playing behind the best point guard in the league.
Yeah, he's playing really well.
Better probably than some of the starting point guards in the league.
Oh, for sure.
And that's massive. And I don't want to go down this road, but I have to.
Uh-oh.
Ryan Hollins and Matt Barnes are playing well, and I don't know what to do with it.
What's odd is Ryan Hollins started following me on Twitter. And it's right after I made fun of him in the Jamal Crawford post on CBS Sports Today.
Awkward.
I mean, I'm not going to stop from making Ryan Hollins jokes. That's a staple of my Twitter game. All right. Matt Barnes has this reputation as being an awesome defender, but he's not. He's not a... I don't even know if he's a good defender. He's bothersome. I would say he's a pest. I don't know that he's good, though, but he is an energy guy, and Ryan Hollins has been an energy guy, and sometimes that's all you need from your bench is energy.
Here's the thing. They're making plays where they're not allowing runs. I think it's probably the bigger thing.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm seeing offenses sputter out against them, not because they're locking them down. They're just making enough, and it's discouraging. The team start to they wind up to try and make a comeback, and then Hollins and Barnes make a few effort plays, and it kind of winds back down again. That's again, when you're talking about people have really unfair expectations for bench units. The bench unit is supposed to be this autonomous could start.
Yeah, everyone's supposed to be a six man, man of the year candidate.
Yeah, and it's your bench unit, the best thing you can do is they don't allow you to lose a lead every single time, and they provide you stability, and occasionally they help you win a game. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all you really should ask for from your bench.
This is going to be a transition into wanting to talk about the Bobcats, but the Wolves-Bobcats game last night was one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced. And there was a point where I think it was 3.5 minutes in the second quarter, the Timberwolves didn't score. They had a lineup of, Will Conroy, Malcolm Lee, Alexei Shved, Lou Amundsen, and I think Dante Cunningham. That's a weird lineup. And it's all because of injuries. They only had 9 guys healthy last night, and most of them were second and third stringers. And when that lineup checked into the game, I said, let's see how this goes. If they can prevent this game from getting out of hand, then the Wolves will have a shot at it. And they didn't. The Bobcats extended it to a double-digit lead, and the Wolves didn't score for 3.5 minutes. And it helped put the Timberwolves in this hole that they tried to dig out of. They did by tying the game in the final minute before Kemba Walker ended Alexei Shved.
Ended Shvedi ankles.
Ended him.
Shvedi ankles.
And that's to your point about the bench. Like, sometimes all you need them to do is not make it worse. Like, you don't need them to come in and take over and score a bunch of points. Like, sometimes you just need them to maintain whatever the current state of the game is. And for the Timberwolves last night, that didn't happen. And they eventually went on an insane run, but it didn't matter because they lost. But that's kind of to your point of you just need decent play.
Yeah, it's just stability. I think that's the biggest thing. Is it's like, because I mean, the Grizzlies 2 years ago, that bench unit would enter, and it was just like, it was a race against time.
Right.
It was, you know, can we get Zach Randolph to breathe enough to recover? Can we get Marc Gasol, you know, to rest enough in a span of 5 minutes to where he can go back in and we can be okay? And the backcourt was the same way. Like, can we get, you know, can we survive without Mike Conley for just 5 minutes so Conley doesn't die?
Right.
And most times, like, they couldn't. They the lead would evaporate, and then they would, and that was the thing, is like the Grizzlies would jump out to these huge leads, and then they would have to basically reinsert the starters and win a whole other game. Because it was like they were playing 5-on-5, 5 minute sets.
Yeah.
And they would have to win all of the sets in which the starters could not lose a 5 minute set. And so that, I mean, I think that's a big deal. And the injuries, like, I think that's the biggest deal, is like, I'm looking at, I watched a large portion of that game. Like, you know, I think they needed a playmaker. Like, Shved can do a little bit of it, but they needed a playmaker, and they honestly needed JJ Barea. Like, that's what they needed.
Sure.
They needed Jub to come in, and if Jub, like, the, you know, it's one where there's different games. It's like, well, they had Peck, it would have been different, or Budinger, but like last night, it was really like they really needed Jub to come in and do his thing.
Yeah, they couldn't finish at the rim. They couldn't make a three. They couldn't make a free throw. I mean, it was an ugly offensive game. They got a lot of shots inside that the Bobcats just turned away. Just, I mean, the Bobcats defended the rim incredibly well, and they did it against second and third stringers, but no one was, you know, crying for the Bobcats last year when they had their players injured and had to deal with their second and third stringers producing the worst record in NBA history. You know, I mean, it's hard to... On the professional level, it's hard to actually feel sorry for a team because eventually everybody goes through this.
And on the Bobcat side, how about them kitties? You know, look, Gordon's not there, right?
Right.
You know, Sessions goes for 18 on 20 shots. Reggie Williams calls timeout when they don't have one. You know, Byron Mullins has 12 points on 12 shots. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist only plays 17 minutes, has 2 points on 4 shots. And they won this game.
Yeah.
And this is a big deal because the Bobcats have now won a game where they didn't play well.
Yeah, on the road.
Like, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
It's one thing to win a game when things go your way. Detroit had things go their way last night, and they pounded the Sixers.
Yeah.
But even against a Bobcats team that's missing as many guys, and I mean, it's not like I'm not going to sit here and say, like, well, if they had their guys, the Bobcats still would have won. Like, no, if the Wolves are full strength, they kill that team. But that's still, you know, we talked about how strong the Timberwolves were and how well they've been playing, and to beat a team that's been playing well on the road, on a back-to-back, that's huge.
Oh yeah, it's completely, you know, that's the kind of thing. It doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs this year. It doesn't mean they're going to make the playoffs that, you know, next year. But that's something for young players to learn. You know, they have to learn how to play on the road, and they have to learn how to play on back to backs. And that's a great learning curve. They had a big lead, they blew it, and they still hung on for the win. That's huge.
They had 4 players with more points than field goals.
Yeah, I mean, the entire game was. I can't stress how ugly it was. I mean, the Timberwolves missed 17 free throws. 17. They had 19 offensive rebounds.
That's Nuggets-esque.
Yeah, and neither team could make a three. I think they combined for like 9 of 34, 9 of 35, something like that. I think there were 34, 35 combined turnovers in the game. I mean, it was ugly. I know there were over 20 shots blocked in the game. It was just how – I looked at the box score afterwards, and Luke Ridenour had 10 assists, and I thought, there's no way. Like, the box score is drunk right now.
The box score is drunk and just spitting out random data.
Yeah.
I think it's, three straight. We'll see where they go from here.
Yeah, but above 500. They're knocking on the door of the Southeast Division.
I love early season.
Yeah. Speaking of the Southeast Division, Heat Nuggets tonight. You're going to be there.
I'm going to be there, and I'll probably write off of it. And it's going to be interesting. We did the four-point play today. I found this kind of an interesting situation because Denver's pick and roll offense has been pretty terrible. They turn the ball 100% of the time out of the pick and roll this year with the ball handler. And the Heat have the 24th ranked pick and roll defense this year. But they turn the opponent over 30% of the time. You notice how bad you have to be to turn the other guy over 30% of the time and still be 24th in the league? Like, that's bad. That means a whole bunch of people are scoring on you at will.
That's almost impossible.
So that's going to be something I think to really watch too. It should be a really fun game because the Nuggets are extremely turnover prone, and the Heat have a really great offense, but the Heat are also on a back-to-back in the altitude, which is a nightmare game. Jeff Van Gundy was talking about it last night, about how like the Heat should just send five guys to Denver and send the rest of them home or to Phoenix for the next game because it's just like brutal. It'll be really interesting. I'm excited for Iguodala versus LeBron. Lawson versus Chalmers is kind of going to be probably pretty fun because of the level of confidence that exists between the two of them. Gallo versus Yellow spent some time on LeBron as well. I think it'll be really interesting to watch how this one plays out. Plus, you got like the hustle guys. You got like Fareed and JaVale, like Chris Bosh and Haslam. So that's going to be fun.
And you can't expect that it's going to happened the exact same way as the first game, but the first game was a lot of fun. I mean, they had, I think, 18 minutes in the game, they combined for 93 points. I mean, it was a high-powered offensive affair, and even if they get 70% of that tonight, it will be a really fun game. You know what's not going to be a fun game? Celtics-Nets.
That's not going to be a fun game.
That's not going to be a fun game at all.
Well, no, I disagree. I think it's going to be a fun game because like people, what's fun is scoring, and that's going to be nothing but scoring.
Is Rondo playing? I think he's questionable, right?
He's questionable. He's game time.
If he plays, it'll be fun.
Yeah. Got a big win last night versus the Jazz. They needed that one.
Yeah, they did. How about that Jeff Green dunk?
Yammed. That was interesting.
And
big yam.
And Paul Flannery on SB Nation had a great quote from Jeff Green after the game, saying how Kevin Garnett's been telling him he needs to be more of an a-hole.
Yep.
Only didn't use – well, at least KG didn't use a-hole. He used the full nomenclature.
Jeff Green, 16 – here's what drives me nuts, though. He has 16 points on 9 shots last night, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. That's a really good game.
Sure.
And Celtics fans are like, he's arrived. I'm serious. Like, people are tweeting at me saying, Jeff Green's fixed now. Guys, you got to wait. Like, it's the same thing with Marvin Williams, 500 days of Marvin. Like, you have to wait. You have to see how this works out long term.
No, if there's one thing I've learned about the NBA, it's that one game fixes a player.
And I'm sure that Jared Sullinger's 2 rebounds last night in 16 minutes is, those are really important rebounds too. It just shows you what he can contribute.
You know, if Brandon Roy plays tomorrow night, which he might against the Warriors and has a big game, I'm ready to write 4,000 words on how he overcame his knee issues and is back to being an All-Star. I don't see how that can go wrong.
Jazz are just so inconsistent right now. They're just so inconsistent.
It's weird that a team led by Mo Williams at the point guard would be inconsistent.
The biggest game tonight is probably the one that's not on national television.
Knicks Spurs. I'm actually really looking forward to it.
That's a lot of three-point shooting. I think it'll be, it's a weird attitude cross, right? The very polite, very perfunctory, very just kind of do their business Spurs versus the very, we have arrived, all hail us Knicks. it's a big game, I think, for the Knicks have two have back huge games. They've got San Antonio and Memphis, and that's a brutal back to back.
Yeah, I'm very, very interested. I mean, they'll switch quite a bit between the two, but watching Kawhi Leonard and Steven Jackson defend Melo while keeping the help defense in line, I mean, Melo is not a single cover guy. And that's kind of the reason why everything's working, is because you do have to focus on him, and then just the barrage of three-point shots is happening around him. It's like, what it looks like is one of those war movies where two guys are going to meet in the middle of the battlefield and just go at it, and all around them, all this chaos is happening. Like cannonballs are hitting the ground, arrows are flying from the air. I'm clearly talking about, you know, Glory or Braveheart or something like
Patriot.
That.
Patriot, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, Patriot. It just all this chaos, and these guys just walk to the middle unscathed in a war, in the middle of a war, which just seems unlikely to me. And then they go at it, and that's kind of going to be what it's like tonight. I could see Steven Jackson thinking that he's the hero walking into the middle of the war on the offense for San Antonio.
There's a lot of matchup advantages, I think, for New York here. I think, you know,
yeah,
they can put Chandler on Duncan, and that's a big thing to be able to do. And then you've got the shooting to kind of combat San Antonio's. You know, it kind of comes down to Parker versus Felton. If, like, Parker's going to have a huge game, and I'm not a huge Tony Parker guy at this point. Like, he's had fantastic years where I commented on it. I thought he was really overrated last year. He hasn't had a really standout game this year that I've seen. He's going to have a massive one, I think against the Knicks. Like, he's going to have to be the guy that really torches them.
You know what I look at is, I think someone like DeJuan Blair has to step up huge for San Antonio. And he can do it against this team with Chandler checking Duncan. I mean, he really has to come in, grab offensive rebounds, finish right away. I could see him putting up like an 18-8, 18-9, something like that, if the Spurs are going to win.
I think Chandler's player's got to have a huge game. I mean, he's a guy that if he doesn't play well, there's only so far I think they can go. They've just invested a whole lot in him, and they need a big guy like that to be able to produce.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he's making over 50% of his shots, but he's such a liability at the free throw line that it makes it hard to give him the ball. I mean, he doesn't take that many a game. I think he takes like 4 or 5 per 36 minutes, but he is just, he's a guy that you have to be able to trust when he gets the ball, whether it's on a pick and roll or an offensive rebound or whatever. And I don't know that I've ever seen him catch the ball and think, oh, this is going to be good.
Can the Nets take out Boston tonight, you think?
Yeah, I could see them getting hot.
They've been really underwhelming.
Yeah, they've been underwhelming. The key would be, they're just so bad defensively inside. The key would be Brook Lopez having a good game scoring wise, and Chris Humphries dominating the boards. Like, I think that's the combination. People are like, "Oh, Brook isn't rebounding enough again," and blah blah blah. He doesn't have to. As long as they win the rebounding battle, he doesn't have to rebound. Like, that's something that kind of drives me nuts. It's like, you want him to rebound well for your fantasy team or to justify a contract you think he doesn't earn, but. And I agree that he's probably overpaid, but that's what the market set for him, so that's what his contract is. He doesn't have to rebound. If they're getting killed on the boards and he doesn't rebound, then it's a problem.
I care more about his defense than I do about his
exactly.
Rebound.
Like, the defense is something that is harder to measure but easier to see, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think you need a combination of the two.
Yeah, I definitely think so. So I mean, that'll be three interesting games tonight. It'll be a fun one to watch.
What are your picks?
I like New York. I like Denver because of the back-to-back and the altitude. And I like Boston.
I'm going to go Boston, Heat, Spurs.
Boston Heat Spurs.
I think this. Wait, where are they in San Antonio?
I believe they're in San Antonio.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I'll go Spurs. If they were in New York, I probably would have taken the Knicks, but I'll go Spurs.
Knicks have to lose sometime, we think.
I mean, it's unlikely they go 82-0.
the odds are not good.
So I would agree with that.
Exactly.
Real quick, you doubted those Detroit Pistons. I tried to tell you that they were on the rise. And
I saw that box score. I didn't catch it. I got home a little bit late. I was catching up on things. I saw that box score and was just like, every time I start to buy into the Sixers, they pull something like this, and then I go the other direction, and I'm like, look at this team. Like, look at what they did. Look at this game against so and so. Look how bad they are, and then they end up winning more. Like,
yeah.
God, this team drives me nuts.
I didn't see the game. I kind of don't want to watch it. I saw Andrew Bynum's hair from it. He looks like Clarence Williams III from Tales from the Hood. That's the only highlight I need from that game.
And done.
Yeah, I think that's going to do it. Let's enjoy tonight's action. Have fun at the Denver game. And I will talk to you tomorrow, Matt.
Yeah, okay. Tomorrow. Thanks.